Collins. All right, folks, we're going to move on. The Supreme Court has curbed nationwide injunctions in Casa v. Trump. And joining us is David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
So, David, if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, if you could lay the landscape of what these nationwide injunctions were doing and where the problem lies with the authority and the jurisdiction of district courts.
Okay, so the issue was with many of the executive orders that Donald Trump had been issuing, and this goes back beyond Donald Trump, back to Biden, back to Obama, and so forth, is that there will be an executive order issued, and a judge will rule in a particular case and say something to the effect of, I think this law might be unconstitutional, however, while we're actually waiting to hear a case on merits, in terms of actually it is, we're going to issue an injunction to prevent the enforcement of this executive order, not just in terms of the parties before us, but anywhere in the United States. And that becomes the important part here, is that the injunctions were going to be applied to anybody who potentially was affected by that executive order. What the Supreme Court said last week is that there is neither anything in the Constitution that allows for lower court judges to issue these type of nationwide injunctions, nor is there anything in any authority granted to them by Congress. Because what the court pointed out is that the Constitution gives Congress broad ability to be able to expand, contract, or determine a lot of the appellate a lot of the jurisdiction of the district courts. And so the Supreme Court said neither by statute nor by constitution do these courts, lower courts, have the authority to issue nationwide injunctions. I think the phrase that the court used was the injunctions should only go as far as necessary. Now, what does that actually mean? We don't know. And that's what's going to get fought out over the next few months.
Well, it was kind of interesting to some of the verbiage that was used is that they somewhat referred to what these district court judges were doing was based on conjecture. In fact, the way that you described it as from the very beginning, I think it might be unconstitutional. How much do you think that weighed on the members of the Supreme Court, where you actually have a judge crafting a decision almost in the issuance of the nationwide injunction by saying, I think this is going to run violative of the Constitution?
Yeah, the way the court was describing it here, and let me explain what an injunction is, by the way, I think this is important here, is that the case before them, before the Supreme Court, was whether or not the president could issue an executive order rescinding birthright citizenship. So the issue on the merits was going to be, can Donald Trump do this? The lower courts had heard cases by people challenging that executive order, and what the courts did was to issue an injunction basically saying that until we have an opportunity to actually have this case argued out on the merits, we're going to prevent, in this case, the president's executive order from going into effect. What eventually the Supreme Court did was to say, we're not going to address the question of whether or not the executive order is constitutional. We're only addressing whether the ability of a court, lower court, to issue an injunction is constitutional. And that's what they said was likely unconstitutional. Injunctions are a very common tool that are used by courts when there's a challenge occurring. And if a judge reaches a conclusion that a party is more likely than not to win on the merits when the case is fully argued out, a judge will issue an injunction and say, we're not going to let the other side do something for now. And so your question and your comment is interesting, because what the judges were essentially doing in one way, if you think about it here, in these cases involving birthright citizenship and in a whole bunch of other areas, they were more or less reaching a decision on the merits, but calling it an injunction. At least that's how the Supreme Court, I think, was describing it.
Then there's this, you know, this little thing in the Constitution about case or controversy. You have parties that are not part of the case that they bring into the case de facto the issuance of the injunction, which they don't, you know, they have a very limited authority, only which is granted by Congress and not provided for in the U.S. Constitution, right?
Correct, yeah. One of my law professors used to say all the time that the Supreme Court or courts in general are supposed to decide cases and not causes. And the way I describe it when I also teach my law students is that a case is about what? Party A and Party B, and the court is being asked to decide a controversy between A versus B, you know, who's got the better argument, you know, whatever like that, so forth. And if you read the Supreme Court's decision from last week, they're saying, yes, that's how injunctions should be applied. They should be applied only to the particular parties in the case. Unless there's reason to think that it has to go more broadly. But technically, these are somebody suing the Trump administration about whether it is birthright citizenship or environmental issues. The injunction should only be applied to that particular case, that particular set of facts.
A lot of the dissent seems to be complaints about, not complaints, that's not a fair characterization, seems to be focused on outcomes, meaning impact to the public, which is not necessarily the legal issue that's before the court. How much should that play in the deliberation at the Supreme Court level of what the impact of whether or not somebody has the authority to do something or not? Shouldn't it be just limited to the authority?
The court clearly has to have the authority to be able to act to do anything. There's no question about that. But once they've had the authority to act, can they consider the impact of a particular order on a party? Of course they can do that. I mean, looking at the outcome or the impact is a very, very traditional way of looking at the law and when trying to interpret, let's say, what the Constitution means or what a statute means. But you still have to have the authority first to be able to act. For anybody out there.
But if the issue and the conflict, if the case or controversy is about the authority, how does impact, why would impact influence a judge one way or the other? Either you do or you don't have the authority.
No. What I was saying is that once you have the authority to be able to hear a case, then questions about in terms of what impact might have.
Let me better explain. So a lot of these cases that are making their way up to, you know, the Supreme Court right now relative to these EOs is whether or not the president has the authority to do so. Right. And that's the issue that's described. What we get in decisions, especially in the dissent, is talking about the impact of the authority. Well, that's not the issue. That's not prime, you know, before the court. The court is the authority. You know, the issue is the authority, plain and simple. The figure that holds the authority is the one that's burdened with having to deal with what the potential impact may or may not be. Every decision that they make impacts someone positively or negatively more often than not, right?
Yes. Okay, we may be talking past one another here.
We are.
I'm trying to figure out where we are. Okay, case and controversy.
And it's my fault, David. I apologize.
Yeah. Case and controversy. The first thing, if you're anybody who's an attorney out there would know this, is that the first thing you have to do whenever you file a complaint is you have to make a statement of jurisdiction. Does the court have the authority to hear the case? Then you have to establish that the person you're representing, if you're bringing the suit, has been injured in some way. And if you can't show injury, if you can't show that the court has the authority to be able to act, then the case can't go any further than that. That's clearly the case. What I'm saying is that once you've established that a court has the authority to be able to act, then there are a variety of things a court may consider as it's assessing the constitutionality or the legality of an action. But it still has to determine first, does it have the authority to be able to act? And what the majority is saying in the CASA case is that the courts may have do have the authority, we think, to hear the case on the merits. They don't have the authority to issue the nationwide or universal injunctions.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's obviously a lot of friction on this Supreme Court right now.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right, yeah.
And it's like they almost have their toe in the water of it getting really personal because of, you know, comments being made that, you know, the majority is wreaking havoc on democracy and, you know, this is the end of democracy as we know it. I mean, there's a lot of language that's being used that for the longest time. I know when I was in law school, I didn't read many dissents that were really directed at other members of the Supreme Court,
yeah.
Much less.
Yeah.
And it's almost as though we're moving to a new day, a new era right now.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Yeah. Unfortunately, what's starting to happen now is that the animosity and the polarization that's really affected the rest of American politics has really come to, I'm going to say, not just affect, but maybe infect. I'm not sure which word I want to use here, but clearly affect the Supreme Court. And you're right. For so long, it was a very collegial body. They worked together. But we're increasingly seeing not just the tone of the rhetoric, but if you actually look at some of the voting patterns, yeah, there's a bunch of cases that are still unanimous, and they always are. I mean, these are cases that I don't want to say are not important, but, you know, they're about interpreting, you know, the third paragraph of the second sentence, you know, of some tax statute or something like that, you know, and they're not really ideological, but clearly the ideology is overlaying the or affecting the decision making process, or at least how they're writing decisions now. And I think there's a lot of frustration going on, I think, with the dissent right now, because they've got three justices, you know, who view the world one way. And there's literally nothing they can do about it on the big cases because the court is ideologically divided.
Do you feel like it? I don't know. For me, it's a sense of we're keeping a tally on wins and losses. You know, and what I mean by that is like Justice Kagan, for example, has previously said many times that she really had a problem with these universal injunctions. In fact, mm-hmm. I think she used the word ridiculous, that they were ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess not so much.
I was going to say the thing to be thinking about right now is beyond the immediate horizon. Because, you know, on one level, short term, this may be a win, you know, for Donald Trump. But longer term, what does this mean, you know, for presidential power? Does it mean that other presidents are going to win? How does this play out? And we can't figure this out right now. I mean, it's just like sort of trying to read the future here. But what it does say is that judges are limited in the power they're supposed to exercise. And I think the opinion also was saying that if Congress doesn't like what we've said here today, Congress is free to pass legislation and give the judges this power of universal injunctions. And so this is a situation where the court maybe on one level was saying, you know, we're not supposed to be sticking our nose into all these different issues, at least from an injunction point of view, and maybe the political process is supposed to do its job.
You know, I remember one of my professors saying that always remember it's really not about the office holder. It's about the office, because what goes around comes around. And what may mm-hmm. be favorable to you today may be detrimental to you in the very near future.
Yes.
You know,
yeah. I mean, think about what this is going to possibly mean now, you know, several years from now, that you may have a Democratic president and Republicans across the United States very much upset with what's happening there, And you could have now a situation where these Republicans don't get the universal injunctions. Remember, when Biden was president, when Obama was president, is when we started to see, especially under Obama, some of these universal injunctions take off. And so this may wind up not necessarily play out in the partisan ways that everybody is describing it right now.
No doubt. And none of these parties come with clean hands. They've all engaged in the utilization of nationwide injunctions. So let me just set that record straight.
Yeah, I was going to say, this has been going on for, I'm going to say, at least a generation at this point, in terms of them jumping, you know, state attorney generals jumping in and lots of people jumping in to apply for these. And so there's enough sin to go around for everybody.
No doubt. As always, David Schultz, thank you so much. Truly enjoy the conversation. Professor of Political Science at Hamline University. Have a great 4th of July weekend.
Same with you. Happy 4th of July. Bye.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.